Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Once again, I'm John Renan, representing the appellant, Trinity Healthcare. This case is about a subject the court is well familiar with, I think. It's a Chapter 74 Texas Medical Liability Act case. Specifically, it's about the 120-day requirement, which the Supreme Court has said strict compliance is mandatory. In this case, the operative facts are not in dispute. The appellee agrees that the appellant's answer was filed below on June 25th, 2021, and that the expert report called the Davey Report was served by the claimant appellee on May 2nd, 2022, which was more than 10 months after the answer was filed. This case is before the court on de novo review. So I think there's some briefing on the other side saying that's abuse of discretion. It's not abuse of discretion. It's de novo review for three reasons. The first reason is that the operative facts are not in dispute.
Well, I think that what becomes an issue on this case is as to whether, yes, you filed the answer. The question is whether they received notice of your answer. And so that, I think, is in dispute. And if we are to ascertain that the trial judge, and I believed it was Judge Clapp out of Wharton County,
yes,
didn't believe they received notice on the date you filed the answer, is that review by this court not a de novo review? Don't we have to take the findings of the trial court and give them deference?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, and that's because this then becomes a statutory construction analysis by this court. So I'm going to skip to that issue. So I think it's an easy case. The two dates are what they are. He missed the deadline. The trial court had no discretion but to grant the motion to dismiss. And I think this court on de novo review has that same lack of discretion, has to grant a dismissal. But regarding that particular muddying of the water by the plaintiffs, he's basically trying to read into the answer part of the statute service, right? So the statute clearly says filed is the trigger date. It's not filed and served on the plaintiff. It's just filed. And we know that this legislature knows the difference between filed and served because it used serve when it talks about the expert report. And there's actually a lot of cases on what served means under 21A because sometimes...
But doesn't the rules also say that other parts of the procedure rules say that it mandates when things are filed with the court that the parties be also served with what you filed with the court. I mean, we're not going to be filing things with the court without serving other parties. Those are basically would be considered ex parte filings. So you're mandated under the rules, not the Chapter 74 rule. I had written it down. The other rules that when you file something with the court, you must also serve the other parties with it.
Right, and I think there's no evidence in the record that it wasn't served through the e-file system as all things that are filed are. He called down to the clerk. He walked down to the clerk. There's no evidence in the record that I went on to iDocket, which is the system they use in Wharton County, and I couldn't find it. There's no evidence in the record of that. I argued to the judge, and I actually looked at iDocket, and I could find it. He filed his lawsuit on iDocket. He got.
Yeah, we've had a whole discussion here about how we used to do it because we're all old school, where we used to actually physically. I think we all remember physically having to file, and I have not been I've been on the bench now 17 years, so e-filing wasn't really around when I was private, so we were still doing it by fax. Sometimes that was where we were.
Right.
So we were having, but when you file something, my understanding, and from, we have no record in this case, right?
Of that.
We have no record. You cannot show this court or could not show the trial court that you served it. You know, before we used to be able to get either a fax printout or an actual green card, whatever it was that we showed to show that we served the other party. There's nothing in this record that shows that it was actually served.
So there's the file mark on the answer itself, which shows that it was e-filed. And just like with his petition, That's also file marked, showing that it was e-filed. And
yeah, but if he was going to go try to get a default judgment against you and said, here, I served him, he would still have to prove that you actually received a copy of the petition. Shouldn't the same be true for you? Now that you're trying to receive a motion to dismiss, that you'd have to provide copies that you served him with. I mean, I know that the statute says file, and I understand right. that. What I do not like is that we are creating a mechanism where people could e-file things and disregard the portions of the procedure rule that says you're also supposed to serve other parties with it. You know what I mean?
I understand, and my only answer to that is whenever I e-file something, it's automatically served. And that's, I think, why we went to e-file, because then it eliminates all these he said, she said, a clerk told me this, and that
and
kind
the
of
record
thing.
Is the record, is there a copy of the answer? You said that there's one with a file stamp?
Yes.
In the old days, you get the stamp, but nowadays you get one returned to you with what looks like a stamp, but it's really just computer generated.
Exactly.
And that is part of the record in this case?
Yes, that is at the record at page, let's see here. Well, it's at our appendix, page 1, and also it's the clerk's record, page 20.
But would you agree with us that the trial judge, in order to come to the decision that he came in this case, found that the plaintiff in this circumstances did not receive notice of your answer?
I don't know what he found. However, if he did, then he's reading a requirement into the rule, chapter 74, that does not exist in the rule. The rule just says filed. And as I say, they know the difference between filed and served because they use served as to the report. So the report doesn't have to be filed, but it does have to be served in accordance with Rule 21A. The other thing I wanted to address that the court might be concerned about is Miller versus Castleman, which came out after we'd filed our brief in this case. And the court is well aware of Miller versus Castleman. I thought that when you first denied oral argument and then granted it, maybe you thought that Miller versus Castleman wasn't addressed, and so I wanted to address that today. That's the case where this court found sort of an exception for the COVID emergency orders by the Supreme Court, and that does not apply in this case because it was never raised at the trial court. It's not supported by the record anywhere. The word COVID doesn't even appear in the record anywhere, and there's just no evidence that the reason why they claim not to have been served is as a result of COVID.
I'll tell you what my issue not my issue. Medical malpractice, the Chapter 74 and what we used to call 4305, because that's the whole thing, and was made in order to alleviate frivolous lawsuits against men. It was a big form of tort reform.
Right.
But case law out of this court and out of the Texas Supreme Court has always said we're not supposed to use this in order to catch people, right, to get rid of what are good claims because of a procedural problem, they get dismissed. And my concern is that that's what this is creating if we are to rule in your favor, that it would encourage plaintiff defendants to file their answers but not e-serve opposing counsels, hide the 120 days, and then file their motions to dismiss. That's my concern.
I understand. there's no evidence in the record that happened.
There isn't. But this court has to lay precedent. I mean, you're asking this court to say something, and that's the precedent that it would be laying. In that, if it was to, and I'm not again not saying I'm ruling in, we're ruling in any favor, and I don't know what they're thinking at all. So, what would it not create that absurd result?
So the courts have said that sometimes, the Supreme Court has said that sometimes the statute does create a harsh result. And I would ask the court also to consider the actions of counsel. Diligence is not an issue for this analysis, right? But I think to address your question, you have to look at that. As you said, if a defendant doesn't answer my lawsuit, and I think I've got a good lawsuit, what do? I take a default judgment. And then I find out when I do that, oh, they did answer, right? So there's things that could have been done. That's just one of them that could have smoked this out if diligence were exercised. I mean, the report wasn't served for 10 months after the answer. And even after he says that he got notice of it by the filing of our motion to dismiss in January of 2022, the report still didn't come out until May. So he almost missed the deadline there, even if you started counting from that date.
But he didn't. From the notice to the filing of the report was 112 days, I think.
Right. Yeah. He's kind of pushing it on even.
Push it.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah, he still had 8 more days. But there are no recognized exceptions to the 120-day rule. The only two exceptions are agreement of counsel, which we don't have, or a timely filed inadequate report, and then the court can grant more time. So besides that, if you've got a filing date of an answer and the serving date of a report, if it's more than 120 days, there's no discretion that a motion to dismiss has to be granted.
So you think that the word filed as used in 74.351 that says file does not incorporate Rule 21A, which says when you file something, you must also serve it.
Correct. I believe that if the legislature meant it for it to be that way, it would have said that. And they did use the word served in the same sentence.
They did.
With respect to the report. So they know what that means, and they could have easily said filed and served.
If we're doing statutory construction, and I'm going to play your devil's advocate,
right.
I would say because they're asking the service of the report to be served to the actual party. I mean, the answer is different, right? The answer is a filing document that's required to be filed. So service in the report doesn't necessarily need to be filed with the court.
Right.
So that's why they use the word service, if I'm playing devil's advocate, which is what I'm supposed to be doing up here today.
And I think from our standpoint, too, clarification on how the e-file system works might be helpful, because we were used to the file stamp and then sending it with a green card to make sure they got it, or then the fax. And now my understanding, I was a trial judge, so we did use the Odyssey and the e-file system. And my understanding is that when you file, like if you file an answer in the particular case, that I think they call them service contacts, would be given a copy of whatever was filed, or at least an email saying this was filed in this case. I'm not sure, so some clarification from how that works would be helpful.
Okay. So would you like us to provide that in a letter brief?
Well, maybe you could just tell me now how that works.
Yeah, I mean, when we're filing, if we file a lawsuit, our contact information is there, and we get served on everything that's filed. So you can have a service only where you don't file something and you serve it only, but everything that's filed is served on us because we're a contact, because we're the plaintiff. So that's definitely the way it works. I think there might be something in the rules, and since we're coming here, I hadn't really looked at this, but I'm pretty sure there's something in the rules that says if you consent to use the e-filing system by filing it, then you also consent to service through it. I think that's in
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So there is a rule like that.
We kind of went there. I can provide that in a letter brief, too, if the court wants.
Well, but my understanding as well is that you can file things and actually not have it served. I mean, the whatever you put into the computer, you can then take a check mark off and you can file something and not have it served. So the problem is, I'm not saying that that's what you did.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that at all. In this circumstances, my concern is, again, the bigger picture of the precedent that we're laying here. And the record that's before us, which is no record, only the judge's decision to deny your motion to dismiss, so that this court, under the appellate rules, do have to defer and have to assume that he made findings that would substantiate their ruling, which means he would have found that you didn't serve the plaintiff in this case.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
On the other side of that, it might be good precedent to tell the community, hey, filed means filed. So if you're filing a lawsuit,
it could be.
Check the e-system and make sure, You may not get served through the e-system for whatever reason. Maybe they had a ice storm. And check the system and make sure it's on there. And we know that it was there.
Well, and I'm going to ask them the same questions, like, it's your lawsuit. Why didn't you check to see when answers were filed? You can bring up iDocket and check it. I'm going to have those questions for you. There is a diligence on both parties to ensure that we're playing on an even playing field.
I understand. One other issue that's raised by the appellee that I wanted to address is that he raises the lack of medical records that were requested. He says the request was and continues to be ignored by appellant. That's a little bit of a red herring for three reasons. One is it wasn't raised at the trial court, so it was raised for the first time on appeal, so it's waived. The letter that's attached as appendix one through eight to appellee's brief is actually not a part of the record, so he attached that later. Secondly, it's not true. The first page of the Davey report, or second page, where he says what he relied on, he says he relied on the medical records of Ms. Keels. So he had the medical records, and he must have got them from somewhere. And thirdly, another case from this court, also authored by Justice Benavidez, Ramirez versus Doctors Hospital. This court said that a claimant's failure to obtain medical records under Chapter 74 does not toll or extend the expert report deadline. So just it really doesn't matter. This court's already determined that that's not an exception, along with many other courts. In conclusion, would ask that this court, under its de novo review, given the fact that the 120 days was far exceeded in this case, reverse the trial court and grant appellant's motion to dismiss and dismiss plaintiff's claims below with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you. All righty. Mr. Johnson?
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. I plan on being nervous this morning, but after driving down here last night from Dallas, I don't have any left.
we apologize for the bad weather. We usually, but it's, once you got past, worse. It's much prettier once you got past Austin.
They kept saying it's good past Austin, it's good past San Mateo, and then, once you get past Schlitterbahn, you're good to go. No, they weren't telling me.
They weren't.
Your Honor, this is a simple case. I mean, there's a question. You've already approached it, and you just have to decide what precedent we're setting. In a previous life, I flew F-15s in the Air Force, and our entire goal was to sneak up and take out other targets without being seen. We painted our jets different colors. We flew low. We flew behind trees. We flew behind mountains just so they wouldn't see us coming. The courts aren't like that. You have to see somebody coming, and that's what we're talking about today. In Davis v. Davis, it said, holds it, there's a burden. If we're saying lack of notice, the burden is on the claimant to prove that they had due diligence. We did that. We sent a partner to Wharton twice. I called multiple times. We called the defendants multiple times. Called vice presidents of Trinity Industries or Trinity Healthcare and asked them to please give us a lawyer, please give us a law firm, so we don't have to file for summary judgment or a default judgment. No one ever helped us. I mean, we were trying and trying and trying. As far as medical records, we had to go to Medicaid, Medicare to get records from them because no one did that. As the court knows, Chapter 74, the intent is to prevent frivolous lawsuits, but also to encourage settlement, mediation, to keep it out of the court. And therefore, what we were attempting here, he brings up the time. Once we found out there was someone to talk to on the other side, we started reaching out for mediation. We already had a CNLC, Certified Legal Nurse Consultant, go through the Medicaid records. We already had a doctor on call. Unfortunately, COVID, he was based out of Florida. He's an elderly gentleman. Flew to Hawaii, decided to live there and not come back due to COVID. So it took a while to get him to get his records and get the report complete and out. But during that time, we were hoping to mediate and avoid going to court.
So here's the issue, though. You know, the rule before used to have an accident if the report wasn't filed timely by accident. And the legislature in their amazing respect to the legislature, got rid of that.
Right.
So no longer gave trial courts in order to give that if there was an accident or a mistake and you missed 120 days, you could extend it.
Right.
There's no more wiggle room for these trial courts.
Well, understood, Your Honor, but this
Let
is not
Let me finish the question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So they want the file to be the 101 day. They wanted to create a black line, basically, not a gray line.
Right.
And if you miss it, as Mr. Reading says, it's a harsh result, but you missed it. So why should we make it a gray line again when we've been told by the legislature, and that's what they are paid to do, create this black line, even if it does create a harsh result?
You would not be creating a gray line, Your Honor. You have to have someone to serve the report on. That is the whole point. The black line is you must serve your report within 120 days. That assumes, in fact, requires that you have to have a party that you can give the report to. I could not give it to the actual defendants. I could not send it down to a nursing home. I couldn't send it to a vice president of Trinity Healthcare. I had to send it to the law firm. And that's what we were trying and kept attempting to determine who would we give this report to. So it's not.
But are we now going to create another body of litigation that says, oh, as you now say, a party, well, now I'm going to have plaintiff's lawyers going, I never got notice, order to give them an extension, which is what we were trying to avoid.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think this is a certain circumstance. Don't understand how it happens. But we never received notice from that. We never we never knew there was another party. When you look at it, the burden was on us to show we never had notice. We offered testimony. We offered affidavits. Once you file, to your question, Your Honor, once you file a case or anything with e-file, it prints out at the end of the e-file a box. It's got little columns and lines and headings. It identifies each person that was included in receipt of that email or that notice. They did not provide that to the court because there wasn't one that had our name on it.
How if it's in the record, which I don't know because I haven't dug that deep yet, but Mr. Renan says that there is in the record a file stamp copy of the answer.
Well, Your Honor, right, that's the first page. Everything you file, the court file stamps it. But on the last page is a list. Like I say, it's a box that has every individual that's received the copy of the email it was sent to, and the date and time it was sent. That is not included in the record.
Now, wouldn't it be available, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said iDocket.
iDocket.
Yeah, wouldn't that have been, if it was just filed and not then provided to the other service contacts, wouldn't the answer be available on iDocket?
Your Honor, I'm not sure about iDocket, but it would be available on their copy of their filing. And that wasn't provided to the court or to us. We wouldn't have had it because we never received the email or the notice in the first place.
So what you're telling us is only the front page and not the page that shows who you sent a copy to.
Right, Your Honor.
Is in the record.
That, to the best of my understanding, Your Honor. All I know is that every time you file something with the court, that box is generated. It shows who all received that email. That was not provided to the court.
I think I know what you're talking about, that little box at the end. We get them in our briefs.
Yes, ma'am.
At the end of who sends, who gets it. And that's not anywhere in this record?
No, ma'am.
All right. So explain to me the affidavit that you – so did someone actually go down to Gwinnett County and they said the answer wasn't filed?
Yes, ma'am. My law partner, Gary Lyon, he drove down there twice. Our client lives in the vicinity, so we were visiting with a client, updating on the case, and stopped by the court. They were told there was no answer on file. Well, he was told.
Okay. I understand that. Sometimes that happens. All right. Anything else?
Your Honor, I mean, like I say, we just go on. They're mostly dismissed. The burden was on us to show there was no service and no notice. We've met our burden. Then the burden shifted to them to show that there was notice. There's nothing in the record they provided to show that notice was actually.
Well, I think that's the problem. What he's saying is that there is no notice requirement.
Well, Your Honor, that just blatantly, our law system doesn't work like that. There is no duty. You cannot give me a duty without notifying me of that duty. And, you know, not only is there, that's a basic tenet of our Constitution, but in this case, it prohibited by not knowing who to serve these things on, it made an impossible feat for us to complete.
All right.
And that's all I have, Your Honor.
No, I don't have anything else.
I don't either.
We've got a 3-minute rebuttal. Mr. Reenan.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be brief because I have to. I heard a little bit of horse switching going on there. The argument below in the briefing is that they didn't have our answer, so they didn't know when the 120 days would start, right? Now the argument is, well, we had the report, but we didn't know who to serve. Well, there's a whole body of law on that. Like, there's a whole bunch of cases on that. And what you usually see in that case is a report dated 3 months earlier and a bunch of efforts in the record of I'm trying to serve different people. That's not in the record here. You have a report dated like May 2nd, and it was served on us May 2nd. And he knew exactly who to serve. So there wasn't a series of attempts over time to serve us starting during the 120 days that extended past the 120 days. That didn't happen. So I think that's a bit of a red herring.
I think that the argument he's trying to make is, as I understood it, was that the reason that it says that the report is not due until someone files an answer is that then it gives the plaintiff in this circumstance someone to serve the answer to. That's the reason behind the way the statute is written. It's a statutory construction case. That's the way I took it. I didn't take it that way.
Well, let's assume that everything he's saying is correct. Wouldn't you, as a plaintiff lawyer, file your lawsuit and then plan within 150 days, I'm going to have an expert report in my hand?
I argue that at every CLE that I've ever taught. If you're going to file a medical malpractice, you should have a report already ready to go when you file your petition.
Right.
That's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame in the circumstances of what, you know, good practices should be. The question before this court is, does file in the statute include Rule 21 that says also serve,
right,
encompassing in the world file?
Understood. And
that, to me, is the issue.
Correct. And
I couldn't find a case that says that.
I think that's because it's pretty clear in the statute. It says filed. They said served over here. They could have said filed and served.
And I don't think it's that clear. I mean, I think you may be right. I'm not telling you that that's not where the court ends up.
Right.
But in my head, when I ever, as a lawyer that practiced for many years, filed to me means also served. It's encompassed in the word file. I can never imagine a world where I would file something and not serve it. So my argument, as we were discussing this with my staff attorneys, doesn't file include served? And I said, there's got to be a case out there that says that, and there's not.
No.
And so that's the internal, at least my internal dispute within myself. And you're correct. File means only file with the court. And it says serve in other places.
And the other contextual part here, if I can just finish one quick thing, is that the courts have been clear strict compliance is necessary with this statute.
It is a strict compliance.
By them. So
I agree.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case will be under submission.